podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Seahawks fans, wherever you may be, thanks for listening to the show. Join your hosts, Bill Alvstedt and Keith Myers, as we talk Seahawks football. Hey, hi, Seahawk fans. Welcome back to another episode of the Seahawks Playbook Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Alvstedt, sitting down with co-host Keith Myers here to talk Seahawks football. And then we're going to dive into our prospect series in the NFL draft this year. We have made it to the defensive side of the ball and defensive tackles, defensive ends in a 3-4 alignment. We're going to go through those today as well. Welcome in, Keith. How you doing?
Doing good. Looking forward to this show. Lot of need in Seattle, in places like the defensive line and linebackers, and now that we're onto the defense, like, there's a lot of need, and I've been looking forward to these shows. So let's jump into the recent signings, because the Seahawks have added two inside linebackers since we have last talked. So they've got both their starters in theory.
Yeah. So we signed Terrell Dodson on a 1-year, $4.2 million deal. He came over from the Buffalo Bills, and originally I think he was undrafted and just kind of worked himself into basically a starting role with them this last season. Did quite well, but they elected not to pick up a new contract with him and let him explore free agency. Came on over. I think it's a great signing, value signing for Seattle. And then we signed Jerome Baker, the previous linebacker with the Miami Dolphins, essentially swapped positions with Jordan Brooks. Brooks goes to Miami. Jerome Baker goes to the Seahawks. The nice thing about this is that I think that we're going to get similar production with better pass coverage ability out of these two guys than what we had before. And it's not going to cost us nearly as much. And we've taken that money essentially and given it to Leonard. Leonard Williams.
They're spending money on the trenches instead of away from the line of scrimmage.
Right. And you have a bit of skepticism. I get that. I understand the fan base is kind of antsy. They wish they would have just signed Brooks. It would have been easier. That was a known quantity. Well, you know, here's the deal. At some point, you got to trust Mike McDonald. He ran the best defense in the NFL last year, and comes from a background in that team with them for like 10 seasons and the Harbaughs and all that kind of stuff. And you need to be able to kind of give him the benefit of the doubt on shaping and constructing his own roster, especially on the defensive side. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to believe that these guys are going to be totally adequate, at least pre-draft, to get us to the point where we don't have to press for need in the draft and overdraft guys, and allow that thing to kind of come at you naturally.
Are you concerned at all with Baker's failed physical designation when he was released?
Didn't know about that.
Yep, he's 27, had wrist surgery, and was in January, and was released with a failed physical designation.
Okay. Well, I mean, you can have that designation post-surgery. That's not seemingly uncommon. And he just hasn't fully healed yet to where he can pass the physical, but if it's a normal wrist surgery, I'm sure the team checked that out and it's something he'd be totally available for training camp by then, I would imagine. But
well, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, they wouldn't have given him guaranteed money, all that kind of stuff, if they didn't feel comfortable. So, what do you think about that signing? And then we just signed an offensive lineman, kind of a journeyman backup guard from the Rams, previously with the Rams. and I think it's going to be a decent signing. It's just a dude though. It's Tremaine Ancrum Jr. Previously with the Rams. What do you think?
Honestly, he's a career backup. He's made one start.
I understand that he looked really, really good in preseason for the Rams. I know that doesn't mean a lot, but they were kind of convinced that he should have been the starter over at right guard instead of Joseph Noteboom. And Noteboom lost his opportunity at left tackle for them, and they moved him over to right guard. And so this guy ended up not starting, but played well. But again, I think it's just a guy. The purpose for this signing is we have no depth. I mean, I think this really kind of took Haynes's spot on the roster, if you will, a guy that's just going to back up. And I don't think that precludes them from drafting very high, a starter level player out of the draft to play left guard, for example.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll see. It's one of those, it's a draft hedge. I mean, to go from Damian Lewis to a guy that has one career start doesn't sound like an upgrade.
Right.
And honestly, until I see him out there, doing the things that people want to say that he can do because of one or a couple of preseason games, I'm not all that excited about it.
Right. Right. I agree. The interesting thing, I will say this though, the interesting thing for me about this signing and then the other signing that we had with the undersized center guy tells me that they are looking at a specific kind of lineman, Keith, at least at the interior spots, guys yep. that can move in space, a little bit more athletic profile, maybe slightly undersized compared to even Bradford, who we just got last year to play right guard. It seems like they might be moving in a different direction as far as body type and what they're asking them to do.
Yeah, we'll see. Or it might just be that they couldn't find other suitors, and they're just like, okay, we need to fill our roster. We'll see. I mean, it comes down to, we'll see what happens in the draft, because right now it looks like they are not better on the offensive line, and they need to be. So if they don't draft, and get a guy, I think they're in trouble this year.
So it seems like we signed three starters, at least on defense. We've got a safety that came in that can pair with Love. We've got two off the ball linebackers, and we've got Farrow, if you want to count him as the tight end number two. I don't know that he's necessarily tight end number two on most rosters, but he is on ours for now, prior to the draft. So overall, what would you how would you grade out Seattle's free agency? And it's seemingly over at this point.
I mean, incomplete. they did a good job, and they kept Williams. That was like the goal. They had a lot of work to do in order to get him under contract, and they made that happen. He was the best defensive lineman available in free agency. And so they kept him. The hope then is that the new coaching staff can get more out of the guys they have, because the only big name that they signed was someone who was already here.
How do you view this overall strategy, roster building strategy, when you take a look at new coaching regime, incomplete roster, not enough money to address all the positions prior to the draft, going into the draft where you're light on early picks, at least in day two? We only have one at this point. And how that looks in this year and versus how it might look in 2025, 26.
It really does feel like they're just hitting, they're trying to hit the reset button a little bit. They ate a lot of dead money this year rather than pushing some of it into the following year, which basically made them, they were able to sign Williams and no one else because they just didn't have the cap space to do it and still fill the roster. And so that was really kind of the situation. By taking the extra $10 million on, or $14 million on Jamal Adams this year, it set them up to where they have to go bargain basement shopping to fill the roster. But the upside is that all of that money is coming off the books after the season instead of it being stretched out over two. They're going to enter the 2025 year with a lot of cap space, a lot of that dead money, all those terrible contracts will be gone, and they will have hit reset, and hopefully they will be able to, you know, parlay that into a long-term solution at quarterback, and, you know, some other improvements.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I don't know how everyone views Sam Howell. I mean, that trade kind of happened since the last time we talked as well. Excuse me. To me, it's an interesting signing for the team. I think it kind of essentially just gives us another Drew Lock, only younger, cheaper, for a bit longer to kind of kick the tires on and kind of find out. Now, he did have some stretches where he had some quality starts for Washington, mm-hmm. others that were, fell apart kind of down the stretch. He was benched a few different times. You kind of wonder about the regime there as far and talent, overall talent available at Washington, to help him out. So there is some upside, but it'll be interesting to see how that translates over here.
His stats actually weren't that bad last year, but there was a lot of empty yards, and yeah
but if you go look at him, there's a lot of things to like. There's a few things to correct. There's a lot of things to like. I mean, taking an upside look at a player like that who's got 17, 16 quality starts in the NFL and is a very, very inexpensive fifth round draft pick. So his cap numbers in, the $1.1 million range for the next two seasons, mm-hmm. For a guy that could potentially fit your scheme, what you want to do as far as Ryan Grubb. I don't mind it. I like the idea, and we've always talked about this too. And it's kind of been a bummer before, like, Drew Lock arrived. We just didn't have any young quarterbacks on the roster. We had nothing to develop at all. So now, at least we gave Drew Lock a long look. He didn't look horrible in his start last year, or two starts that he had here, but he moved on, and Sam Howell was available. We went and traded some minimal compensation to take a look at him for the next couple seasons, and I'm okay with that, really.
Yeah.
And maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, but it allows the draft this season, if they can't reach the quarterbacks that they want because the compensation is too high, to get up into the top three or four picks in this draft, which is where those quarterbacks are going to end up going, then they can, opt out again this year. They're going to have to, at some point though, Keith, figure out a way to get the guy that they want out of the draft, because I don't know that you can find a franchise guy the way that they're doing it now. And you can end up in purgatory in the NFL pretty easily without a quarterback and no way to get to one. If you're always selecting mid round, first round, mm-hmm. or later, if you're just good enough, if you're just squeaking into the playoffs every year, or if you're just missing the playoffs, you just have this no man's land as far as being able to move around adequately to take a chance on a draft pick. And somehow or another, they need to be able to do that.
Well, yeah, and that's really the problem. That's why when they were up at 5 last year, that was the perfect opportunity for them to get a quarterback in theory. But the top 3 picks were all quarterback, or 3 of the top 4, and left them with no one that they liked.
And it looks like they were right in that. CJ Stroud looks like he might be the only guy that really turns out.
Yeah. And then, from the top. Well, Will Levis looked good when he wasn't hurt, but he went in the second round. So a lot of teams passed on him. But, you know, the other guys up the top, Richardson was, that was just a dumb pick by Indy, and everybody knew it. And I'm not sure why everyone talked themselves into Young being the first overall pick when guys look tiny. But yet they did. So it kind of comes into a situation where, like, yeah, you'd think you're a top 5, you might be able to trade up, but the teams that were there didn't want to give up their spots. They wanted quarterbacks. So what are you going to do? It would have been nice to have a top 5 pick this year, simply because there's actually quarterbacks in this draft.
Right.
If you had a top 5 pick, you could probably get one of them and feel pretty good about it. But that's all you got.
So I think that the free agency, as far as Seattle is concerned, is virtually done now. I understand that they may be poking around the edges for a couple more players on the defensive side. I've heard Hankins. I think he signed somewhere else, though.
He did. He signed with he signed with the Bengals.
And then apparently Randy Gregory is the latest name that's getting some attention. But he's kind of floated around as well since he was drafted. In fact, I believe, honestly, that John Schneider was wanting to draft Randy Gregory when they ended up drafting Malik McDowell after they dropped back too far. They dropped back and they dropped back again. And then Randy Gregory and a couple other guys that they were looking at, Sweat, I believe, was in there as well in the same draft, were off the board. And then they got stuck. Or was it the Malik McDowell one, or was it the other kid that we drafted from Texas in the early second round we pressed for, or maybe the end of the first round? You know who I'm talking about, defensive end. Didn't work out here. He moved on without.
He went to Arizona and then has lost his job there. LJ Collier.
LJ Collier. That's who we drafted instead of Randy Gregory. Think that you know, at the time that was a mistake.
They moved down too far.
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about the draft again. Let's get into this conversation. We have talked for a long time about the deficiencies at defensive tackle on this team, specifically space eater guys that can take up double teams and occupy more than one gap. And at least that's my perspective. I know you kind of feel that way, and there are others as well. It's kind of, this is how a 3-4 should look and work, and a true nose tackle kind of is the anchor, the key to making a 3-4 defense work. And we just have not had one, and we've played people out of position, and I think that's really kind of led to a lot of the issues that we've had as a defense, in that you moved Dre Jones around too much last year. You moved Leonard Williams around when he got here. Jerron Reed was kind of out of position. He was willing to do what he needed to do for the team, but their run stopping ability as a team really suffered because of all of that. So there's a few guys in this draft that could help us, I think, overall. It's interesting, if you go take a look at big boards and so forth, and I've got the consensus mock draft database big board up on my screen just so that I can look at some players where the Seahawks would kind of be looking to draft. And, you take a look at Byron Murphy. He's probably the one of the consensus defensive linemen up near where Seattle could potentially draft at 116 overall. Jimmy Newton, the other guy from Illinois, 6'2", 304 pounds, but Jimmy? Shorter. Well, they call him Jimmy.
I know.
Zerzon Newton. Is that how you pronounce his name? Zerzon?
Yeah.
They call him Jimmy, though. But he kind of projects as a three technique kind of a guy as well. So does Byron Murphy. He's not really a true nose tackle. Both of them are short armed guys.
The first real nose is Devondre Sweat.
Yeah.
Out of Texas. But he's 366 pounds, and there's some worry that, you know, that his ability, like, weight's going to be a problem, and he's actually going to get too big and have a hard time keeping his weight down in a playable range. I'm less worried about that just because I've, you know, watched a bunch of his tape, and I think he's going to be fine. But he's the first real and only real nose tackle in the top of this draft.
A 3-4 nose tackle, yes. Specifically. A guy that's going to be a two-gap guy, take on double teams, et cetera. Yeah, I agree. I mean, there are other guys out there that could do the job, quote-unquote, like Dwayne Carter out of Duke, and maybe Rook Arroyo, I think is how you say his name, out of Clemson, but he's, you know, only 294, 95 pounds. Chris Jenkins out of Michigan. They might be really intrigued with Chris Jenkins. They're very familiar with him. But, yeah, but again, he's a guy that's going to be 300 pounds coming in.
Those are nose tackles.
Yeah, right. I know. So the guy that you talked about is, you know, on a big board, where's he at? He's like, you know, close to 40 or 50 something.
40,
yeah. 47 the overall.
47 on the consensus one.
So that would enable, if Seattle was really interested in getting him, they would need to just kind of drop back, pick up additional draft picks, and move around a little bit to try to get him. He would not be a guy that you would want coming off the board at 16. I've seen John Schneider do that before where he feels pressed. He needs to get his guy and he overdrafts. That'd be a little bit of a worry. I would, you know, if they wanted him in the first round, I could get behind that. But if they drop back into the 20s and picked up like two or three additional picks on day two, I would be okay.
Yeah. I mean, so if we're going to talk, you know, just nose tackles, who's the next one after Sweat? The next one I've got is, DeMonte, Capehart out of Clemson. He's 320, 6'5". He could put on the 15 pounds that he needs, to be more of an anchor in the middle, I think pretty easily. You know, his spot in the big boards is in the 70s. That's how far down you have to go before.
I agree. Everybody else is kind of a hybrid guy, guys that can play defensive tackle as well as the defensive end or three tech. Mason Smith, LSU's 306 pounds, 6'5". I like him a lot.
I do too, but not as a nose tackle. I like him as a three tech.
Right. How about, did you say McKinley Jackson? Is that who you just talked about?
No.
I like McKinley Jackson, Texas A&M, 6'2", 326 pounds. Just kind of a, you know, a pretty long guy, 34-inch arms. Not too much production as far as getting to the quarterback, but that's not really his job. He's got 8 hurries, 2 quarterback hits, 4 sacks on the season in 2023. But he's just kind of a force there in the middle that's going to stop runs. I like that guy. Christian Boyd, I think, 6'4", 317 pounds out of Northern Iowa is another name. Fabian Lovett out of Florida State, 6'4", 314 pounds. Jordan Jefferson, LSU. I like Jordan Jefferson, 313 pounds. They're not going to be Trevondre Sweat.
You know. Yeah.
Justin Rogers out of Auburn.
The thing is that I'm looking at these guys and they're like, okay, they're guys that I like and I think they could play the position in a year or two.
Yes.
But
right.
Are they? They're not going to help the team. They're not
difference maker. No.
In terms of being able to come in and anchor that line and really let guys like Leonard Williams excel.
That's why I think they should have signed Hankins. You know, they didn't get a chance to even bring him into the building. But if you don't have a draft hedge guy like Hankins, where you know you can throw him out there to start, at least, you know, the first part of the season, there's nobody else really in the draft. If you miss out on Trevondre Sweat, there's nobody else that's really going to come in and start for you right away. Now, maybe Cameron Young, already on the roster, brought in last year, came in at like 305 pounds. They were going to add weight to him. He was going to try to get up to 320. Don't know exactly where he landed as far as his weight and how the team feels about him. I don't know. They, you know, he might not be strong enough or be able to take on those double teams like Mike McDonald wants, but his choices are fairly limited right now.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, you know, I think both of us are in agreement that we need a guy like that on the roster. I just don't know how realistic it is to get one before like round four or five. Like most of these guys that we just mentioned are available in round five, six, seven, and undrafted.
There's really two on the first 2 days of the draft. And that's, well, you said McKinley Jackson. I think Capehart and is one, and then Sweat is the other. McKinley Jackson's in that borderline right at the end of round three. Mm-hmm. But I think probably round four. Yeah, there's two guys. There's two nose tackles in this draft that are guys that can come in and play right away.
I was looking at Jacksonville. I was looking at Baltimore's defensive line last year, and they had like two or three players above 325 pounds on the roster that took like anywhere between 25 and 45% of the snaps. And we don't have a single player in that range for this defense. And I'm just wondering how important that is to McDonald. I mean, they didn't make it a priority in free agency. Now, there's not a ton of guys out there that are like that. But, you know, if that's a really important thing, they don't have a single guy, you know, and heading into the draft where there's not a lot of guys in the draft either. So very curious to me.
Yeah, it is. And we'll see where that goes. There just wasn't any guy in free agency that I really was like, oh, they need to go get him. Mm-hmm. And I think the team recognized that too, and they weren't going to overpay for someone who just wasn't going to be that good. I think they like Cameron Young, and they're hoping to get a guy in the draft.
Yeah,
and honestly,
I wouldn't be shocked if it was like a McKinley Jackson, because you know, it's a Senior Bowl guy, did really well there. I know in the past,
he's only 6'2".
Yeah, that's very, very true. But so, you know, guy that just retired from the Rams was only 6 foot.
Yeah, well, he is not a guy that you should compare anyone to.
No. So there's a whole bunch of other defensive linemen that we can talk about. So, again, Jimmy Newton out of Illinois, Byron Murphy. I think those two guys could be in contention for a Seahawks pick if you're really interested in investing in the trenches. Both those guys are going to be sitting there at 16. Possibly worthy of that pick. But there are other players available as well. So Darius Robinson out of Missouri, 6'5", 285, kind of a base defensive end guy. I like him because he's really long, 34 and a half inch arms, 84 and a half inch wingspan, 4'9", 4'40". Just really effective, strong guy. We'd mentioned Trevondre Sweat. Mm-hmm. I like him a lot. I think that would be a great pick, but not at 16. Excuse me. Who else do you want to talk about? I really like Chris Jenkins, Keith. I mean, to me, Chris Jenkins is a kid that makes a lot of sense if we didn't have Mike Morris on the roster. Now, if Mike Morris,
He was on IR. I'm not going to count on him. And it's nothing against him. It's just,
I agree.
you know, if you're expecting a guy to anchor your rotation, he better be a guy that has done it before. And this is a guy, Morris is a guy that didn't play last year. He spent the year on injured reserve. So yeah, there's a lot to like about him, but he's never been on an NFL field.
And essentially Dre Jones, Leonard Williams, Miles Adams kind of play the same spots. I mean, they all kind of move around a little bit between five tech and three tech.
Yeah. So they're both three, and they're all three and five tech. And that's kind of, and Reed too. He played nose last year, but he's a three tech.
Right.
That's the thing. When the teams re-signed Williams, they really limited, I think, what they're looking for. They're either looking for someone to replace Dre Jones in that rotation so they can free up some money, or they've got what they need. They've got three guys and a back of the rotation guy in Miles Adams. Like, will they draft one if the right guy falls? Of course they will, but they're not looking for that position because they're kind of set.
Honestly, so at 116,
Darius Robinson is the guy that I would really like to see them get. He's a second round pick. They don't have a second round pick, but man, I think he's going to be good as an outside, as a five tech. I think that's his spot, and I think he'd be good there, but they don't have a second round pick, and that's kind of where he falls. It really is just hard to look at this year's defensive line crop and think, wow, Seattle's gonna get this particular guy. Braden Fisk might be the one in the third round if he's there, because at 292 he's big enough to play the three, complete the five, and man, that first step is quick. You're looking at round three. Other than Byron Murphy, I don't see a guy at the top. I know you like Jimmy Newton.
It's easier to say.
Yeah. But honestly, both of those guys are Leonard Williams again. They've got him. They've got him on the roster. They just paid a lot of money to keep him. And when they paid a lot of money to keep him, I think it moves those guys down on their
wish list. Well, especially when they decided to construct the roster the way that they've done in free agency so far. Everything points to them drafting an interior offensive lineman.
It really does.
Or a guy like Fantano. That's going to move, can play tackle. Now you take a look at Abe Lucas, and you just don't have confidence right now that he's going to be able to have a long-term career at right tackle in Seattle. And maybe the Troy Fatano makes the most sense at 16, just stick and pick and have your guy.
Well, but they also signed George Fant to be that if Lucas can't go, we've got a guy.
But we don't have a long-term answer, though. It'd be nice.
No, you're right. They don't. I think that it removed tackle from their first-round pick expectation, and they've removed three and five tech with the Williams signing. And so it's either going to be a nose tackle or it's going to be an interior offensive lineman.
Or a shocker pick.
Or someone that's going to really surprise the hell out of everybody.
Like Brock Bowers or Joel Alt. Like if Joel Alt fell, right? Okay. Maybe they're not so completely enamored with Charles Cross. And maybe they draft Joel Alt and then Charles Cross is made available.
Or Charles Cross just moves to the right side.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's a little finesse over there. But
Charles Cross played pretty damn well last year.
Yeah,
I know he missed a bunch in the beginning of the year, and when he came back, it was a rough start for a couple of games, but once he got his feet under him,
that's true.
He played pretty damn well. I wouldn't be looking to replace him. They got much bigger needs.
I just think in this draft, there's always an opportunity for a guy to fall that they can't not select, like a Rome, a Duse and Duse, or a Joe Alt, or a Dallas Turner, the edge guy from Alabama, or maybe even Brock Bowers. Who knows? I don't know if they would. You know, Seattle, when's Seattle ever chosen a tight end really high like that? I have no idea.
I don't know. I got to say, if a guy like Rome Odunze dropped and was sitting there at 16, I know they don't need him. They've got all the receivers. They've got three elite guys. But how do you say no to that?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, dude can just flat out play.
And it gives you roster flexibility in 2025. You don't have to do anything this year. You just play them. But next year, they could move off of either Lockett or Metcalf.
Save a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm. So let's get back to defensive guys, though. I like Michael Hall, the defensive tackle, defensive end out of Ohio State. He'd be available, I think, in the third round where Seattle's got a single pick now. I just, if they don't stick it at 16, Keith, everything, you know, that I'm aware of based on experience over a long period of time watching these drafts is that this is a prime time opportunity for John Schneider to drop back from 16, no matter who's there, to get value. Because as you know, you and I both know, there's a void between pick 16 and pick 81 that's just too large for John Schneider to not have any action.
Oh yeah.
And so in order to get in position to have picks between there, he's going to have to drop back out of 116. There's no other draft capital other than future draft picks or trade assets to be able to move around in this draft.
Mm-hmm. If he picks at 16, I'll be kind of surprised. I really do expect him to move down at least once. It might be a bigger jump so that way he can get a second round pick out of it, like drop from 16 all the way down to like 24, to get a solid second round pick without having to give up anything. Also, to be honest, there's a lot of guys between 16 and about 30 that are going to rate out really evenly.
I was just talking to my dad this weekend. He's just a draft nut, just like I was. He started me back in the late 80s, really. And so he pays attention. We were just talking about value, trade value, first round values this year. How many first round graded players are there? What's the shelf look like? And I said, you know, after you get about to 15 or 16, players between 15 and 40 are about equal value, depending on the position group that you're looking at. And so if John decides that he's got five or six guys that he's got equal grades on, and he's trying to pick best player available while still filling need on the roster, you could really drop back, you know, go to 16 to 20, 20 to 24, 24 to 27, pick up two or three day two picks and feel really a lot better about how you
second and third round picks.
Yeah. Feel a lot better about coming out of this draft. Cause if you're not going to get a blue chipper, if you feel like at 16, there are no blue chip players yet available anymore, or there's one, but you're not so old or it's not on your board or whatever. Moving back makes the most sense because you're going to end up having a four picks in the top 100 or five picks in the top 100 instead of currently having two. And you need those players.
If two third round picks.
They traded one for Sam Howell. They traded out of it and dropped right, back traded, to 102.
Dropped
down
in, they dropped back into it. It was a pick swap. I mean, it is a two picks in the top 100, that's not going to cut it.
No.
And I know that a lot of fans will be upset if he keeps moving back. But honestly, the way the draft looks, there's a lot of tackles that are going to go in that range, and they don't need a tackle. So move back and get, if Sweat is your guy, because you want a guy that you can stick in the middle of your defense and really anchor it, you don't have to take him at 16. You could take him at 28, 26, right. 20, 25. So move back a couple times. Get those second and third round picks. You're going to want them, and there's a lot of guys in that range that can come into play.
Yeah, the linebackers that you're going to be looking at, the safeties that you might want to draft, interior linemen, centers, guards are all sitting there. Linebackers, defensive tackles. There's a lot of position groups that you're going to get, you know, first, second, third, fourth players, best players at the position off the board, you know, in the second and third rounds at those positions. And you could do worse. And they need it. I mean, they do. They need it. Let's see. Meke Wingo from LSU looks good. He's a defensive end, 3-tech. Mm-hmm. You know, like you've said, we're loaded at that position right now. That's probably one of our stronger positions, to be completely honest. true nose tackle and maybe another linebacker, maybe another safety, interior offensive line, maybe a third tight end or a second tight end. That's where the need is. And that doesn't necessarily line up exactly where the draft picks are in this draft. So it's interesting to me. Who else do you want to talk about, Keith?
I like
Mason Smith. I like Mason Smith.
Yeah.
I think he's a guy that he's got a frame that you could add weight to. Now, if they want their defensive tackles, nose tackles to be multiple, to be able to play nose tackle and defensive tackle, like 3-tech, mm-hmm. kind of move back and forth between those two as opposed to a 3-tech, 5-tech blend, Mason Smith could be a guy because he's 6'5", 306. He's 21 years old. He's got 35-inch arms, around a 5.0 40, super athletic.
His frame can add 15 pounds without losing any athleticism.
Yes. This is definitely a guy that I've identified. Yes.
Yeah. That is a good suggestion because I like him. I really do. I think he has a chance to put on some weight. He's also really young. I love when the guys mm-hmm. are really young.
And he's a run stuffer. I mean, he really is. He plays the run really well. If you stick him out at 3-tech, he's going to be able to effectively, you know, stop the run on the interior edge there. High motor, good pass rush ability. He's mm-hmm. not perfect. He's not great, but he's going to give you some penetration a little bit. He's on Bruce Feldman's freak list at number 12 overall. Former 5-star recruit, LSU, obviously. I think there was some injury history with him. He missed a year, but he's a good player. You know, he's a good player.
Yeah. Tyler Davis out of Clemson is another guy similar, just also on the freak list. And, you know, bench pressed 405 pounds. And did 30 reps at 225. So, like, this is a guy that is just strong. He's 301. And yeah, I think he doesn't have Mason Smith's ability to put on like 15 or 20 pounds, but I think he could put on a few, get him up to 310. And, you know, in a spot where, okay, so he's a little undersized for that particular spot, but I still think he can do the job. Like, there's a lot to like as far as his athletic makeup and his technique.
Yeah, I agree. I think Fabian Lovett is another guy that's like that. Florida State, 6'4", 314. Got 35 and a half inch arms and an 84 and a half inch wingspan. guy like that's got the ability to really be disruptive, to bat down mm-hmm. passes, to, you know, all that kind of stuff. Heavy hands, very strong, balanced. I like players like that. I think Mike McDonald probably likes players like that as well. Jordan Jefferson's another guy, 6'3", 313, 33 1/8 arm, a little shorter. But he's also kind of a guy
that could put on some weight. Yeah. High school wrestling background. Nice. Really knows how to use his hands.
Nice. Yeah, and another late round guy. Guy that's going to be available in the 6th, 7th round, undrafted, Justin Rogers out of Auburn. 6'2", 330 pounds. He's just a bowling ball of a guy. Run a 5.20 40, but his split was good, showed some burst. Instinctive, mm-hmm. has a lot of strength, quickness, strong core, that sort of thing. Guys that size, like 6'2", 330, you just can't teach that. He's the second heaviest guy I've looked at beyond Sweat. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of ready made to come in and be part of a rotation. You know, if you take a late flyer on a guy like that, sometimes those guys end up working out pretty well.
Yeah, he's very Cameron Youngish. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't really have any other guys that are guys that I. Okay, I'll admit when I'm going through these, I'm in my evaluations, I'm devaluing the 3 and 5 techs because I don't think Seattle gets one. They need a nose tackle or at least a 3-nose hybrid.
Yes.
And those are the guys that I'm valuing. There just aren't many in this draft.
No.
It's not.
Yeah, we've mentioned them all. I mentioned them all. That's it.
That's all the way down into like round 7.
Yes. And beyond. Yeah, it's kind of crazy that way. I agree with you. I think that we're pretty strong. If you really think about it, we're pretty strong along the defensive line and edge, the edge group on this team. We just need one more defensive tackle. You know, whether it's a draft edge veteran guy that they bring in or a guy that they draft fairly high. You know, so that you can make sure you get one that you know is going to be able to come in and be part of a rotation with Cameron Young. But I don't know that they necessarily draft high on edge rushers or draft high on 3 or 5 techs, you know, in this draft. There's just too many other holes that they have and with limited draft stock to do it.
Linebacker, safety, offensive line, tight end. This is a team that needs... Yeah, nose tackle. You're right. I know this was supposed to be the defensive line show, but I look through this and I'm like, yeah, okay. This like Jimmy Newton, great player. I don't want him at 16.
Yeah,
the team doesn't need him, and it's not that he's not a good player, but let someone else draft him and draft some. You know, or if someone really wants him, move down. Let them move up and give you picks to get him.
I would consider Byron Murphy, but he does worry me in that he's only 6 foot and he's only 308 pounds with 32 3/8 inch arms. Yeah, he's really super athletic and so forth, but does he fit the prototype of a defensive lineman that is going to be a long-term solution in Mike McDonald's defense? I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a disruptor. There's no question.
Yep.
But
Murphy's teammate Sweat is a guy that I'm much higher on and like, gotta go get him. If they can, but not at 16, that's overdrafting.
Yes.
Agreed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's no reason for us to keep going because there's other guys to talk about, defensive ends, base defensive ends, all that kind of stuff. They'll probably draft a guy. You can never have too many of those kind of guys on your roster. They play special teams. Guys get hurt, et cetera. And we just don't know for sure exactly what he's going to want on the roster. There's a certain type. Maybe there's a certain personality type that he wants, a gritty guy to be able to come in. Maybe he's not enamored with Mike Morris. He knows Mike Morris. He worked with Mike Morris. Maybe he's not completely sold on him. You just never know. Okay. So next show we are doing edge rushers. We'll probably run into the same sort of issue because we've got a pretty good crew. As far as starters are concerned.
They have their two starters and their two primary backups.
Yes.
Already on the roster.
The only reason that you would draft a guy really high would be if you were going to replace Daryl Taylor. Because he's got a mostly unguaranteed contract.
Or if you, even then. Or if, maybe you're thinking that Achenna Nwosu is not going to be fully ready at the beginning of the year. Maybe you're going to move Hall inside to inside linebacker. But we're looking at fourth, fifth round guys is mainly what I think we're going to be looking at for edge players, because they're not drafting a guy at 16. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's get out of here. Find Keith on Twitter at MyersNFL. You can find me at MW Seahawk. The show is Seahawks Playbook Podcast on your favorite podcast platform and our YouTube channel. And hit the subscribe button when you get there. And don't miss the show. So until next time, go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Seahawks Playbook Podcast listeners, thanks for joining us for another edition of the show. You can find us on Twitter. Bill is at MW Seahawk. Keith is at MyersNFL. And the show is at Hawks Playbook. You can listen and subscribe to the show at SeahawksPlaybook.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.